I'll just get some things out of the way. You should all have a brochure on your chair, and inside that is a prize draw coupon. If you filled one in before for me and you've had emails from me, you don't need to fill it in again. You will get entered in the prize draw this time anyway. But if you want to fill that in, what I do is I record these talks. I always try and record them on two different things because sometimes one of them didn't quite pick it up. And so you will get, I will write to you and tell you when the next recording's on there. So I do give talks up and down the country. So every time I produce one, I just write you an email and say, I've just done another one. Here's the link to it. Okay, so if you like me talk today and you give me your email address, you'll always be aware of when I'm performing next. Sometimes I give talks on the same topic. You'll see the same heading. I never give the same talk twice because I don't refer to notes. So it's always different. And I let my unconscious give the talk, so it wanders off in different directions. It always covers what it needs to. It doesn't particularly follow a pattern. but I get there in the end, as some people who come and see me on a regular basis will tell you. I do make it interactive, so there's things that you can do and join in with me. And today I'm going to do something about pain. And I'll explain all about that later. So if you can think about any aches and pains that you've got that you've had long term, not anything new. Right? If you've just broken your arm and you came here, I'd want you to go to the hospital and not have me turn the pain off. Okay. And I'll actually ask for a volunteer as well. So if we've got somebody who's got chronic long-term pain, then I will help them turn it off. Or we'll attempt to, because it's not me that turns it off, it's you. Okay, and it's just, I do a thing called brain bargaining, so I might as well start with that. I think we've got everybody. I think there's a couple of women still. We'll leave the door open temporarily, but if it bothers you, just tell me and we'll have it closed. Okay. Trudy's going to do a little bit of filming today. If you don't want to be involved in that, that's absolutely fine. But whoever volunteers to come out front to have the pain turned on, obviously we'd like to film that bit, if you wouldn't mind. It's just that it's one of these weird things. I do work, and I'm a bit like a magician who, when I do a trick, I think, I didn't know how to do that. So I'm amazed as everybody else is. And when I do work with people, I help people usually, if it's a breakthrough session, in 3 to 5 hours of chronic anxiety they've had all their life, and it goes away. And I see it as a miracle, even though I see it every day. So what they think of it, I have no idea. But you're not allowed to advertise miracles. Okay, so the best I can say to people is, I will make a major difference in your life if you come along to see me. And I do that whether you have a short session or you have a breakthrough session. But I love breakthrough sessions the most, because if anybody's got a particular issue, or they've got lots of issues, there's usually something underlying it, and there's a cause there. And if you get to the cause, it's a bit like 10-pin bowling. You knock the middle pin down, lots of the other pins go down. If you hit it right, you'll get every other pin down. Right? But at least you stand a very good chance of knocking everything down. If you don't, if you just treat the symptom, it's like reversing the 10-pin bowling and having the back row there. And you bowl it down and it knocks one of the pins down. You come to another session, right? It resets itself. It drops down, picks that pin up, and it resets it again. And you have to start all over again. I'm not interested in doing that work. You know, if you want that work, go to your doctor. Okay. And it's like, because I treat the cause rather than the symptom, it's not like getting a tablet that replaces the chemical that you're not making. I think it's horrendous that you go to a doctor with a depression and the doctor says, oh, you're not making a certain chemical, I'll give you it in tablet form. Why isn't he asking why you're not making that chemical? Why isn't he looking into the cause of you not making that chemical? And if anybody suffers from depression, I do know how bad it is, and I do know what a dark hole it is, but it is related to your thoughts and your thought processes. And this is what I'm going to talk about today, is how your thought processes change your whole life. And I'm not saying you have to go away from here thinking everything's positive and brilliant, because that's not how life works. But I am saying that your thoughts control your emotions, and your emotions are controlled by your chemicals that you produce in your body. And I did a little test with people yesterday, and I'd like to repeat that if you don't mind. I see things as, that's joy, right? Anywhere in the world where you see people doing that, that is joy. There's just a sort of openness to it and everything else. And as people get depressed, they start to close in on themselves. And if they get really depressed, it gets to the point where it's like, and you keep out as well. Right? And depression I see as that. It's not just the, I want to be in this bubble and stay there and I'm not sure what to do. It's also, don't you enter it. And it's very difficult to help people who are depressed while they are depressed, because they can't see any options. You know, they're locked into this dark, it's like being down a well, but really well down it. And all you can see is a little chink of light at the top if you're lucky. But you don't know what's up there. And while you're down the bottom of the well, you actually think that's all there is. You can't actually see the fact that there's things up there because you're too far down the well. And it's a horrible illness. But it is caused by your thoughts making the wrong chemicals. So, you don't see people going down the road going like that. And then you go, ah, he's depressed. Okay, that doesn't happen. And you don't see people going down the road like that, in joy. But inside, we are making those muscle movements as though we've done that, or as though we've done that. And even worse, when you're depressed or angry or whatever, you're tensing lots of bits up in your body. And you're putting yourself under stress. And stress was a great thing when it was designed. It was designed for that instant when the saber-toothed tiger leaps out at you. And you have like 20 seconds to survive of running like hell and getting somewhere safe. And in those 20 seconds, that burst of adrenaline you get puts you running at 100 miles an hour. You could out-sprint anybody on the planet in a race, because your life depends on it, and you've got to do that. But your body also understands that it needs every speck of energy it's got. And it shuts down parts of your body that aren't needed. So it shuts down your stomach working properly. Because why does it need to convert food into energy that isn't going to be used in the next 20 seconds? It doesn't need that. It doesn't particularly need good eyesight. It just needs you to be absolutely able to focus in on the place, the rock you're going to hide behind or the tree you're going to climb up. And for 20 seconds, that's brilliant, because half of you are going at full speed and lots of you is shutting down, because that's a waste of energy. Because if you're going to be a meal in 20 seconds, you don't need to digest your dinner. Okay? Somebody else is going to do it for you. So, but this is what we do now. We get in stressful situations. And it's not the stress that kills you. There was a recent study done over a long period of time where they assessed people in stressful jobs, or those jobs that are thought to be stressful, like high managerial positions with, you know, 30, 40 staff under them and so on, or sales jobs, all the things we associated with pressure jobs. But they also measured how stressful the person thought their job was. So they monitored loads of people over a period of 10 years. And what they did was they assessed all the illnesses and things that came up, and the death rate amongst them. And when they examined it, it wasn't what they expected. It wasn't the people in the most stressful jobs that died of heart attacks and things like that. It was the people who thought their job was stressful. It was just in their thoughts. So some of the top directors who run these really busy businesses seem to work around the clock, seem to thrive on the stress, actually enjoy it if you get a buzz out of it. That's fine. But if somebody thought their job was stressful, even if they're a janitor sort of cleaning up and, you know, at school, and they go, well, every 5 minutes somebody puts another bit of toffee paper on the floor, it's so stressful. That's enough to give them an early grave. So it's all about your thoughts and how you perceive things. And the strange thing is, it starts a spiral of things, because if you perceive things in a certain way, like the glass is always half full, you know, things are bad out there, bad things always happen to me, that is the way you look for things. You look to actually be right all the time. You want to prove yourself right. And you look for all these things. Bad things always happen to me. And people go, no, they don't. No, no. You think, that's just your thoughts. And you go, no, because yesterday these three things happened. Right? And we've all got a friend that we all see now and again. And every time you speak to them, they're a major disaster. Right? Not just one, but like four things at once going on. And they're all major, and they're going to court over it, and this one's happening, and it's life-threatening. But if you actually go away and analyse what they've just told you, and take away how many times they've magnified it, you had the same happen to you the day before as well. Right? It's just they've latched on to this, oh, this is really bad, and it's horrible. And we do things like exaggerating. So I gave the example yesterday of a woman who went on holiday and said there was 100,000 things wrong with the cottage that she went to. And if anybody says that to me, I go, name them. And we're lucky if we get past two. It just doesn't work. And I saw a young lady this morning who said something about work, and it was like being stabbed in the heart. And I said, right, that's not really great language, because the way your unconscious work, it looks for the truth in it. So it felt like being stabbed in the heart. Suddenly, I mean, all the other connotations of being stabbed in the heart come out, that it's going to kill you. Well, no, it probably hurts a little bit, but it wasn't like being stabbed in the heart. So when we exaggerate things, it's wrong, because we're just giving power to it. And the thing I started talking about yesterday, I don't think I actually finished, was that whatever we think about, we attract into our lives. If we think about the thing we don't want to happen, that's the thing we're looking for all the time, and we attract it into our lives, because everything we think about is about it, this thing that's going wrong. And your unconscious tries to get you anything you think about. So if you think about something, your unconscious then goes, how can I help them get that? If you're skidding in a car and you see a tree and you think, oh, I don't want to hit the tree, I don't want to hit the tree. You actually turn towards the tree, you're looking at the tree. The brain's going, hit the tree, hit the tree, hit the tree. It doesn't understand all the negatives. You actually end up hitting the bloody tree. It's in the tree for miles and you still hit it. Right? And has anybody played golf here?
Yeah. Once upon a time.
Okay. If somebody says to you, right, there's a pond over there, whatever you do, don't get your ball in the pond. Where does it go? What noise do you hear next? Splosh. Because you concentrate, I mustn't get the ball in the pond. Mustn't get the ball in the pond. So you're looking at the pond, mustn't get the ball in the pond, and you, oh, damn it, should have gone over there. And that's what we do with life all the time. We concentrate on the thing that we think might happen. The thing that we don't want to happen, we think about that. And by doing that, we give it energy and credence. Because everything we think about in life, we can either turn it into reality, or we can ignore it. You think of thousands of things in a day that you ignore. Right? You'll think about buying something, and you go to the shop, and you're determined to buy it, and you drive all the way there thinking, oh, I'm going to love owning this thing. You get to the shop, and it's not quite right for you. All the way home, you go talking yourself out of it. You go, oh no, it wasn't right for me anyway. Oh, please, I didn't get it. I bet it's cheaper somewhere else anyway. And you then talk yourself out of it on the way home again. But most of the things that enter our head, we think they're real. We particularly think it real if it hurts us. I don't know why that difference is there. We don't sit down and have random outbursts of laughing. We don't suddenly go back in time to this wonderful event that once happened and start giggling about it, unless something triggers us off that's something similar. And yet, all the time, we'll nip back to this. We feel a bit sad one day, we don't know quite why, and then we'll nip back and find something that's really sad. So what I'd like you to do now is just think of something happy for a moment. Right? And quite a few people did that, and their shoulders went back and their head went up. Right? So I want your head and your shoulders up in the air, and think about something really happy. Okay? And as you do that, just remember what I did before about closing in on yourself, and just feel yourself closing in on yourself as your head goes down and you start crouching a bit. And go down and try and hold on to that happy feeling. Off you all go. Try and hold on to that happy feeling, start closing down on yourself. When you get down there, stay down there, please, for me. Okay, And you might find now that it's very difficult to think about the happy thing. So while you're down there, I'd like you to think of something sad. Okay? And now try and hold on to that sad thing as you bring your head back up and lift your arms in the air and go into the joy state. And try and hold on to the sadness. Try and be sad. Come on, try and be sad, please. Anybody sad? You can't do it. Everybody put your arms. Thanks for joining in. When we get really into a mode of, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, we actually take on a body shape internally that is crushed, and it's stopping things working, it's stopping blood circulating. This is why we get muscle cramps and all sorts of things. We get shoulder problems or stomach problems because there's a certain place, and it's different from all of us, that we tense up when we get stressed. And we're not aware of it. So there's two aspects to your brain, how it works. And the great thing is, everybody on this planet is absolutely unique. Right? We're all absolutely unique. But the way your mind works, it's fairly simple. It works in several different ways. I've put it down to 13 ways so far that I've worked out, from things that work to alter people's minds. And I've found 13 so far. I'm sure there's more than that, but I'll find them because I'm just writing a book about it. So today's topic is brain bargaining. And it's a thing I invented myself. And it's from a guy called Grindler, who did NLP. And I always get him and his partner's first names mixed up. Anybody? John Grinder. And he invented a thing called N-step. An N-step, well, originally, of course, sex. There's a Freudian slip. It was originally called six steps. And then people realised that sometimes you can miss steps out, sometimes you need to add some in. So N-step is a mathematical thing of N means a number of undetermined values. So, but I actually studied this, and there's something I disagree with him on it. So what he does is, he talks to somebody's unconscious, and he gets it to switch pain off, for instance, is the main technique behind this. But he'll do that on the basis that your unconscious will never harm you in any way, shape or form. And so he always believes that even if it's giving you something nasty, like a rash or something, that you don't need, and funny I do it actually, that if he talks to the brain and he says, right, this rash is really ruining that person's life, but there must be a positive intention by giving them the rash. So give them three different things that are less intense than that, because you can split this problem over three different things, and give them three different things instead. Three or more things. Right? So... And it does, it takes away that rash, but then it gives them three different problems that they didn't have before. And I think that's stupid. I mean, I can understand why he got there with it. So I've taken it a step further than that. If your unconscious is doing something for you that causes you a problem, like a guy on a course I dealt with, he had IBS. So he constantly had to go to the toilet, the slightest sign of stress and things. And they, as a demonstration, they worked on him and told it to give him three things instead. Now, to me, IBS, stress that makes you incontinent, various things like that, that's a wrong thing. That's not giving you a message. That's not telling you anything. There's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't stop you being stressed. It has no value whatsoever. And so, to me, brain bargaining is actually talking to somebody's unconscious and saying to them, this thing you have, you were given it for a purpose at that time, but it's no longer of any value. It might have been appropriate for that particular instance. You know, it might have been that something frightened you and you had to rush off to the toilet, so you avoided the confrontation that was coming up. Brilliant in that moment. But things that you actually learn and you take a lifetime learning from it and hang on to it, it's a bit like having a tattoo done when you're totally drunk. You know, it seems good while you're drunk, but it's not very good the next day. Particularly if it's a cartoon or something.
Nearly happened to
you. Happened to you, right. So, So my idea is you talk to the unconscious, you find out what originally caused this, and then you deal with it in a manner, and Bandler will... Grinder will actually do this thing where... sorry, I've lost my place here. I'll come back here. Yeah, it's finding out what caused it. It's finding out what caused this problem in the first place. And talking it into such a way... Oh, sorry, yeah. The bit I was going to say is, when they do this, they do yes or no from your unconscious. I never ask an unconscious for a no. Why would you? I give it a yes, or silence is, I'm not quite ready yet. You haven't convinced me yet. Okay. And the reason I came out with this idea is, if you say to a small child something like, would you like a lollipop? And you catch them off guard, and they don't quite understand what you've said, they'll go, no. And then you go, but I said, it's a lollipop. And then they'll go, no. And they'll stick with no, because they said no the first time. And they just get locked into that no. And your unconscious is the same, because if it's given you something that it thinks is protecting you from something else, it now feels that you've got a safety shield, a safety blanket. And the same example again, if a child's got a favourite toy or a safety blanket or whatever, and chew on it and all that, you can't take it out of their sight for a second. Right? They want it back. And if you go up to a child and say, I'm going to have that, and you whip it off them, they'll scream the house down. And you are no different to that. If you have an issue that goes back into the past, you're holding on to it, you also think it's keeping you safe. Your unconscious has said, I've provided this for you, it keeps you safe. And so you can't go up to the unconscious and say, I'll have that, mate, you're not having that anymore. It won't let go of it. So you have to not sneak up on it, but you have to challenge it a bit and say, this thing you've given them, I know you gave them it for a reason, and thank you for that at the time. Is it of any value now? And it isn't. So I keep asking for yeses. You know, are you ready to let go of it? And I just give me a yes when you're ready. And of course, if it doesn't, then I go, well, I haven't convinced it yet, so I have to tell it some more. So in a few moments, I'm going to help anybody in the room who has long-term pain switch it off. And I will want a volunteer to come out front, just so anybody who's not got pain can actually see how it works. But this is not just about pain. This is anything that your brain's running that annoys you, or anything you keep doing over and over again and you'd rather not do it. This is the way you talk to your unconscious. So in a moment, I'm going to get you to get a yes from your unconscious, and I get all of you to do that. And then we'll carry on, and we'll talk about pain, and then we'll get that pain removed if we can convince your unconscious that that pain is no longer needed. So I'm going to talk about pain now, which you'll hear at a conscious level, but your unconscious is already listening to me. So, a new pain. A new pain like breaking your arm. If you scratch your arm, you get a little bit of pain. If you cut your arm quite deeply, you get a lot of pain. If you break your arm, you get terrific pain. And that pain says, get off to an hospital and get something sorted about it. You cannot think of anything else. You don't suddenly go and park the car up or tidy the house before you go. You are in so much pain. The pain is saying, get it fixed. And you can't think about anything. You won't think about food. You won't think about anything. You just go up to the hospital and get it fixed. So you go up and they see it's broken and they put it in a plaster. As soon as it goes in the plaster, the pain goes away. Why? It's still broken. Right? There's no reason the pain would go away just because you put a plaster around the outside of your arm. You've still got a broken arm. But the unconscious goes, well, you've done everything you need to. You've got it immobilised now so it won't do any more damage. And so it turns the pain on, or it lessens it right down. You don't need to keep taking painkillers when you have a broken bone. If you didn't have pain and you broke your arm, you'd carry on working. You'd have a bit of a soggy arm. It wouldn't do things right. And eventually that bone would poke through the skin, and then it would go septic, and then you would die. So pain is a very necessary thing at the time. If you have arthritis, or even terminal cancer, for instance, if you have terminal cancer and you're in the last few weeks of your life, why do you need pain? What on earth can you do about what can you do about it? You can't actually go, okay, I've sorted everything out now, I shouldn't have pain. It doesn't, why does it need to give you pain? You don't need reminding. You're going to die in 2 weeks. Why would you need to continue to be in pain? So you can literally bargain with the brain and say, don't need this anymore, turn it off. I went on holiday once and I chipped a tooth before I went away, and I managed easing it with wine for a week. And then I went to Scotland and bit on something while I was away the following week and actually smashed a tooth in half. Excruciating pain that came on about midnight, and I didn't have any painkillers, I didn't know what to do, I didn't want to knock on the next person's room in case they thought I was some sort of molester in the night. And so I'm there laid in bed, sort of like, oh God, I'm in pain. I thought, I wonder if I can do this on a temporary basis, on the basis that I am already booked into the dentist from chipping the tooth, so I'm going as soon as I get back from Scotland. I can't get in anywhere before that, so I wonder if it'll turn the pain off till next Tuesday at 1:30. So I actually asked it, and it went yes. And I went, I'll turn it off, and it went yeah, and the pain went. And the following Tuesday, I was about to go to the dentist, and my local spa shop, I saw somebody acting suspiciously and thought they were about to be robbed. So I ended up dealing with that, phoning the police and all sorts of things, and forgetting about my dental appointment, which as soon as I'd dealt with the police, I was like, oh my God, it's gonna, the pain will come back now because it's past 1:30 and you know, oh, and I promised it and all that. But look at it carrying on. And so I was then going, yeah, I'm in at 7:30 tonight, they've got to see me, just hang on in there. And it did, and I went to the dentist. And they said, what's the problem? I said, I smashed a tooth in half. And they looked in and they went, you must be in agony. And I went, no, I can't feel a thing. No, you must be in agony. I can see the nerve. And I said, no, I'm fine. And she wasn't convinced. So she got this metal thing and shoved it on the nerve. I went, you can feel that, can't you? I went, no, but I will if you keep messing about. She said, well, I don't know what to do now. Shall I inject you? And I said, I can't see the point. I can't feel anything. And she went, well, what will I do? I said, just do what you need to do, drill it or whatever you. And so she did. So she dealt with this dental work. And I got charged less because I didn't need an injection. And she was just like blown away by the idea that I didn't have pain then. But it did exactly what I asked it to do. So, new pain is necessary. Old pain, you don't need it. If you've got arthritis, you're already creaking and your movement's restricted anyway, you're not going to suddenly start doing cartwheels, are you? Okay. So if I can get that agreement that whatever injury you've got, you're not going to suddenly make it worse by doing things because the pain's gone. Okay. So I'm going to talk to your unconscious in a few seconds and actually ask it to release you from that pain. Are you all right with that? Who here has pain that they want to remove? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is anybody not? Got pain, don't you? You haven't got pain. Good. Okay. So, is anybody wants to come out front? Be my guinea pig.
Well, if I'm turned not towards the audience.
Absolutely. Yes, you're quite welcome to do that. Yeah, come on in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to help this lady here. You're going to be standing up. Are you all right standing?
Stand up, yeah.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Okay, and your name is?
Janet.
Janet. I'm going to be helping Janet, but I want you to follow me, and I'll be talking to you as well, for you to do the same to your pain. Okay? So first of all, we're going to ask for a yes from your unconscious. This is just, we all have an unconscious, and we don't actually appreciate that it does about 99.9% of everything we do. It runs your heart and your lungs, and it virtually talks for you. It invents every word that comes out of your mouth. It does everything, but we don't appreciate it. So we're just going to say thank you to your unconscious, yeah? And then we're going to ask it to give you a yes. And the easiest way I found this, if you're capable of standing up for a moment or two, I'd just like you to stand up, please. If you have any problems standing, just stay sat down. Okay. So what I'm going to say in a moment, I'm going to show you on Janet first. Right? I'm going to ask Janet in a moment for her unconscious to give her a yes. Am I right touching your shoulders?
Yes.
And if you do something like that, is that fine? Now, I want you to relax, because Janet's a bit sort of solid here, like something's going to happen to her, but it's not. So I want you to be relaxed.
Sorry about that.
That's all
right. Forgot to switch you.
No problem. And in that relaxation, so shake yourself. Everybody have a bit of a shake first. Just enjoy yourself. Roll your head around a bit. Okay? Just loosen off. Right. Now, in that looseness, what I'm going to do is you just put your feet fairly close together, so you just stood on a balance point. You fix your view somewhere in front of you, but higher than eye level. And then we just talk to your unconscious, and I'm going to get it to move you forward or back or side to side. But a movement so much that you know it's not you that's doing it. Right? So this can seem a little bit spooky, but this is just you. Right? So I'm going to ask your unconsciouses now, collectively, to give you a yes in any way, shape or format that you feel. And I want it to be quite vigorous so you know it's a yes. Okay, so just go inside, thank your unconscious for doing everything it does for you, and ask for a yes. And then just wait for it. Okay, I can see a lot of you swaying. If you just get a bit of a sway and you're not sure, just say, give me it stronger than that, please. Make sure I get a yes. And as soon as you get a yes, sit down, please. Apart from Janet. Have you got a yes, Janet? Yeah. Okay, have you got a yes?
Yes.
Very definite. Okay. Right, okay. Can I work with you later then, just to... just one-to-one.
Oh, okay.
You come see me later. Because rather than not have the time to fully do this, I'll see you on a one-to-one basis. Okay, so we've got a yes, that your unconscious exists, and it's just telling you yes. Now, do you mind telling us where the pain is? In your shoulders and your back. Okay. Is this constant?
Yeah, most days, yeah.
Okay. Have you got it now?
A little bit.
A little bit. On a score out of 10, 10 being the worst pain you've ever had and 1 being hard, well, no pain at all, what number is it at the moment?
5.
That's 5. Okay. So let's see if we can turn that down a bit. So have you had this investigated by a doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any actual physical injury there?
To the bottom of the spine, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, are you in agreement that if you do this now, you're not going to start doing cartwheels?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you're unconscious on the basis that it knows what's good for you and what isn't. At the moment, and I want you to all take this on board, at the moment, if you had some other illness applied to your spine and you got pain from it, you wouldn't know, because you wouldn't be able to distinguish it different from the pain you've already got. So in many respects, you keeping this old pain is injurious to you on the basis that you wouldn't notice anything new. So I'd like your unconscious to agree that it would be better to remove the old pain and allow you to receive new pain as and when you need it. And I want your unconscious to give you a yes that that is. Just ask for a yes and let it. Is that you or is that your unconscious?
I've already got it.
You've got it, okay. So, I'd like you to physically do this now of, we're going to ask your unconscious to turn that pain down or off. And I want you to physically put your hand out, all of you that want to do this, I want you to physically put your hand out and find a dial that says pain. Okay, everybody who's got pain, just physically put your hand out, reach onto that dial and see whatever number it's on now. Remember that number. Okay, and ask your unconscious if it's willing to work with you to turn the pain down or off, and just wait for a yes. If it doesn't give you a yes yet, just ask it again. Are you willing to work with me to turn this old pain down or off? As soon as you get a yes, I want you to start to turn that dial down digit at a time. Can you do that physically for me? Just reach the dial. Okay, that's quite slowly and steadily, as slowly or as fast as your unconscious will let you, start to turn that down, a digit at a time. If it won't let you turn it all the way off, that's fine. Okay, but turn it down until you get the lowest digit it will let you do. And as soon as you get to that lowest digit, just say to your unconscious, please make it at that level. Okay. And as soon as you've got there, just put your hand down for a moment. Now, I want you to ask it to keep looking for opportunities to turn that pain down or off. At every available opportunity, it needs to look to turn that old pain down or off. And now that you've done that, if it's allowed you to move that dial, thank it profusely. So I want you to say thank you, unconscious, for everything you do for me. I do understand you originally gave me this pain for a reason, and thank you for removing it for the same reason. And Janet, how are you feeling now?
Yeah. It hurts there.
It hurts there.
It hurts there.
Still helps there, but we did more. We did more ask about the back and things, didn't we?
Yeah.
So shall we now specifically ask about the neck?
So we did that. It
hurt. Okay. So just straighten up. How much did that hurt then?
What in a figure you mean?
Yeah.
Six.
Six. Okay. So don't keep turning your head there.
No.
Okay. So back into your unconscious. Thank you, unconscious, for doing the rest of the work with Janet. What I'd like you to do now is just see if there's any reason that you need to get the pain turned on in Janet's neck. If there isn't a reason for that, I'd like you to start to turn it down. Down. Or turn it into a different feeling. Because sometimes when we recognise pain, if we turn it into something different, and they do this with childbirth, childbirth is a very natural process. They take horrendous pain that other women have had, they turn it into a different sensation. So if you can turn that into a different sensation, please do it. Do it now. And as soon as you've done it, give Janet a yes. Okay. Would you like to just have a little test?
Slightly better.
Slightly better. So it was a six, so what is it now?
Three.
A three, I think that's more than slightly better. Don't suddenly do it. Or else it goes, no, you're not playing by the rules now. Come on, do it. Okay? Okay, now, last but not least, I'd like you to thank your unconscious for this and make this a fixed thing apart from the ability to turn it down and then off. I want you to keep this long term. This is not just for today while you get home. This is a long term thing that's in Janet's best interest. And while it's in her best interest, you can keep that pain turned down or off and look for more and more opportunities to keep her pain free, mobile, so that she'll actually have better health. Are you willing to do that?
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Okay. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you.
Everybody. Lovely. Who else had a variation in the number that they had? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. And what did you start off with? What number?
I started off on a six.
Okay.
And I very slowly went down to a 1.5.
1.5? Brilliant. And you feel good?
I was just getting the numbers in my mind as it was very slowly on its own as well.
Absolutely.
Physically turning.
Okay. Anybody else want to share that with us? Yourself?
Mine was like 3 to 1.
Brilliant.
5 to 1.
Brilliant.
3 to gone.
3 to gone. Yeah, I like that. Anybody else?
Yeah, 3 to almost gone.
Almost gone. Brilliant. I did nothing to you then, right? I wasn't sending any. Well, I always do send that energy out because I'm full of love and joy, but I didn't physically do anything to you. You did it yourself. This is brain bargaining. It's asking it if it's ready to do something for you. You're one of the few people on the planet now that know how to talk to your unconscious. Right? Most of us every day talk to our unconscious. When we say, oh, I won't get that job, oh, I won't get that job, oh, you know, I hope I don't crash the car, and all these things, it's listening to that. It's listening to all this rubbish that you ever come out with. In relationships, if you get to the end of a relationship and you think, oh, I don't want this relationship to end, I don't want this relationship to end, I don't want it to end, what are you thinking about? Are you thinking about continuing the relationship or are you ending it? So if you actually want to continue in that relationship, you need to remember the exact opposite of ending the relationship, which is starting one. So remember what you did when you first started a relationship. And this is where I come to the fact that we're all ready to put off things until something happens or the right person comes along or I've got this amount of money or when I finish work or etc. And the reality is you want that now. We all want love and joy in our life. We all want to be pain-free now. We don't want it over there. Everything we think about for the future, quite often, the future things that we plan are not great things, are they? Like, apart from the occasional holiday, everything we think about the future is the worry of how we're going to get there or how we'll deal with that or how we'll cope with something before we've got there. Now, before when we did that, whatever you think about gives you the chemicals and the body shape. So if I think something horrible is going to happen here, I'm actually dragging those chemicals back to now and living in those chemicals as though that thing happened. Is anybody here a big worrier? Okay. Right. I don't want you to say it out loud, but I want you to think of three things you've worried about that actually happened. It's difficult. We worry about things every day, and as we worry about them happening, and we get closer to it, it doesn't happen. So we forget about it. Well, we find something new to worry about. We live a life in worry of things that never happen. And when you worry about the worst possible scenario what would happen. You know, you don't think, oh, there's 1,000 different things, I can think of any of those, or it will work out, I'm sure it will work out. We think of the worst thing that will happen. I spoke to a guy over Skype who phoned me up and he'd just been diagnosed with cancer and he wanted to feel positive about it. And I said, okay, I obviously can't heal cancer. What do you want me to do? And he said, I just want to feel positive. But it's going to be 9 months before I find out if it's worked or what's happening and so on. I want to have a positive 9 months. I said, great. So just tell me now what you actually think is going to happen. And he said, I don't want to go there. Which told me, in a few words, that he had the worst possible scenario. So I said, no, tell me. And he went, well, I want to be positive. I want to talk about positive. I said, but you're not positive. You're actually positive that this terrible thing is going to happen. Tell me what it is. And he wouldn't tell me. So I wouldn't leave the subject alone. So after about 5 minutes, I actually annoyed him until he swore at me. And in that moment, he told me that in 9 months' time, he would die a terrible, effing, agonising death. So I'm watching him on Skype, and he's there. I can see he's dying a terrible, agonising death in front of me. And I went, good. Which shook him up out of his thing. So he went, good. So I then turned it into, good. I'm pleased you said that. Now we can work with you. And he changed again. Because the chemicals now was, oh, I'm going to work with you now. And so he left behind this terrible, agonising death. And I started working with him. And all I said was, well, there's many other options. That's the worst option. That could happen. I'm not going to say it's not. You know, you've got a terrible illness. But just imagine in 9 months, if you then went, you know, I'm cured now, and this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, because I've put everything right in my life. I thought about what matters to me in my life. And I'm really pleased I had the cancer. That's another alternative. And then there's about 1,000 in between that, and you want to pick the end one. Okay? So every time we worry, we're always going to the extreme end of it. We only ever live in the now. That's all we've got. We've got this second here. And one thing that I tell every client, and I always start my sessions off with this, and I want you to do it for me now, not for me, sorry, for you. I want you to understand that you are here now, sat in this room, and that everything you've ever done in your life has led you to be sat here today. And I want you to accept where you are now. All the circumstances surrounding you and everything. I want you to accept it. I don't want you to like it. Right? If you're not in good circumstances at the moment, I don't want you to like it. I want you to accept it. And the reason I say that, if you go to a town that you're not familiar with, and you get to the tourist area, there's a big map up there with cathedrals here, libraries here, this is here, this is here. You plan where you want to go. There's always a bit that says you are here. And you know where you're setting off from. And so you can go, oh, we'll go down and then we'll go to here. Now, if some vandal covers this up with a sticker and puts you are here down here, you will never get to where you want to go to. And the same happens. If you don't accept where you are now, if you think, oh, by now I should have had this, I should have had this money, or I lost this money, or I'm not in the relationship I wanted, or you're actually not accepting where you are now, and you're always going to set off from the wrong place. So I want you, in this moment, just to close your eyes just for a few seconds, and just think about this seriously, that you accept how you are now, who you're with now, your current circumstances, in every way, you accept that. You can then look to change any of those circumstances. If we've got time, I'll just finish off with a little bit of what I did yesterday. Just you can open your eyes. And if you need to close your eyes for this, please do so. But I want you to visualise that we've gone into an art gallery. And we've gone into a very long, narrow gallery part of it, a hallway almost. And there's a massive canvas on one wall. And it goes as far as you can see. And that canvas has a left-hand side. That is your life up until now. Please go in and take a seat. It represents your life until now. And I want you to see that in all its colour or lack of colour or whatever. And just understand that there's nothing you can change on that left-hand side of the canvas. It's a collage of all the things that have happened in your life. All the bad things, all the good things. None of the mediocre stuff is on there because it doesn't register. You don't hold on to it. But you hold on to the bad stuff and the good stuff. So just see that picture on the left-hand side. See today as a thin black line separating the canvas. And there's a tape over it. And tonight you'll be able to peel that tape off and you'll see what's happened today. And you put it into context. And just understand that all that thing, none of that exists anymore. Only in your mind and the meaning you give to it. You now have the right-hand side of the canvas is a pure blank. You, from accepting where you are now, can choose to carry on painting that canvas the same as the left-hand side. Or you can wash your brushes out. You can get a whole new paint palette. And you can colour in that right-hand side any way you want to colour it. You can also take a frame and you can frame any part of that canvas, including just framing the new white bit. You have a perfect blank canvas to draw on. You have all the skills to do it from learning what you did on the left-hand side. That is all you need to take forward with you, the learning and the lessons from the left-hand side. And if there's learning and lessons there that you haven't completed yet, then get some help to do that. That's what I help people with. But if you can do it on your own, just wash those brushes out now and start how you want your life to be. And as a final bit, I'd like to talk about the fact that we can barely influence ourselves at times, can we? We can't influence anybody else. Everybody else who comes into our life has a part to play in it. But we can't rely on them to be a percentage of us. Everybody here needs to be 100% them. If you attract somebody into your life then, you've got 100% plus. And that's wonderful. There's my good lady there, Trudy. She's really enhanced my life. But I maintain myself at 100% of me And if truly comes or goes into my life, then I lose something beautiful, but I'm still 100%. If we think we're 50% and we need a partner to be 100%, we're always a bit missing. We become needy, and that's not very nice for the other person either. I want you to be 100% of you. If you've got issues holding you back, deal with them. Just understand that every thought you have is your thought. Some of them come automatically, so you get a thought you don't want, but it's still down to you to say, that's not a thought I want. And quite a simple tip is, if you just pop your hand out, everybody put your right hand out for a second. I want you to take one thing at the moment that's bothering you, okay? And I want you to think about it, and I want you to visualize it going on your hand. Turn it into a solid object. Take it out of your head, put it into your hand. Cut your hand a bit, give it a colour. Make it real. Give it a weight. Bounce your hand up and down. Feel the weight of it out of your head. Give it a texture. Give it a feeling. Give it a sound. Give it a smell. All right? And just understand that negativity in there. And just do one thing for me. Just push it further away from you and notice how it doesn't bother you so much when it's further away from you. And then pull it back towards your head and notice how it's more and more affecting you as you get it back near your head again. Okay? And from that point there, I want you to throw it away. Okay? Now, pop your hand out again. Think of the same thing. You won't quite see it the same. Notice the colour's gone. Notice it's lighter. Not affecting you so much. Okay? Visualise it. Try and bring it back how it was. Get it in your hand. Throw it away. Put it in your hand, throw it away. Put it in your hand, throw it away. Add a bit of stupid music. Put it in your hand, throw it away. Throw it away, throw it away. Put your hand out. Can anybody get that bad thought back and feel bad about it? Anybody got it the same? No. Okay. The only thing, and I'll finish off on this. See that as negative. If you think a negative thought, what you're going to attract into your life is that negative thing you're thinking about. As soon as you think of a negative thought, think what is the exact opposite of this. Flip your hand over. The thing that's on there can't stay there. Just think of positive tattooed to the back of your hand. Think of the exact opposite. If this is what you don't want to happen, that's what you'll bring into your life. So think about the thing you do want to bring in your life. Okay, I've been Stephen Blake. You've been absolutely amazing. Thank you very much. Anybody who wants a chat, come down and see me at the stand. I give money off booking sessions today. I am writing a book which is called Brain Bargaining. I've just had some fantastic feedback from Hay House over the strength of the thing I've written. So that should be out in the next month or so. Thank you very much.